Hallo, Ladies and Gentlemen, und willkommen zu einer weiteren Folge des Podcasts Natürliche Ausrede. Die portugiesische Regierung berät offensichtlich darüber, ob die Stadt Porto abgeriegelt werden soll. Wegen Covid-19 natürlich. Miguel de Sousa, Master in Biochemie, Unternehmer und Verwalter des künstlerischen Erbes seines Vaters, Angelo de Sousa, lebt in Porto. Da mein Portugiesisch gerade mal zum Bestellen eines Kaffees reicht, ist Englisch in diesem Podcast die Waffe der Wahl. Und verdammt nochmal, spricht Miguel ein perfektes Englisch. Are you close to the microphone at all?
If I get any closer, I'll be licking it. I'll be licking the screen.
Don't lick the screen. I think it's maybe even better if you go, if you do a little microphone distancing.
Microphone distancing. Microphone distancing. Elbow to hand distancing. Is it any good like this?
I guess so, yeah.
Okay.
Looks good. Looks doable. I really do not know if the jitters that I'm hearing are due to the connection or... Well, we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Is this jitter?
We'll see what I will do.
This?
Sorry? Yes.
This? That's my chair, man.
Okay.
I'll try not to move.
It wasn't the chair, but we'll see. We'll figure it out. At the end of the day, we would have a nice talk. If it would be stored for eternity, who knows? Who cares?
I don't.
So, how are you? What's going on over there?
Well, I'm sitting down. I'm looking out the window. There is nothing happening here.
It's nothing happening.
No, really. This, you know how this place used to be. You know, you go to the river, so just a couple of minutes stroll down the road, and you know it's Sunday. You'd have cars, people walking around and stuff. It's pretty much deserted. But this is Porto.
There's nothing.
This is Porto. If you go a bit more north to some of the, let's say, cities like Povo de Varzim, Vila do Conde, people are still business as usual.
Okay, but over there,
but over
nothing.
Here, we're pretty much observing the quarantine or the voluntary isolation.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha. How are the people taking it? I mean, how is the general reaction of the public?
I don't really. It depends. It depends a lot on what kind of people you're talking about. For example, people that we know, this will sound a bit, you know, classist, so to speak, but people with, let's say, a similar upbringing or cultural background or whatever, and people in our age bracket are being pretty much observant and keeping their precautions and stuff. Older people, not so much. Remember those old people that would gather at that bodega near the river? Not the pastry shop, but the other one. They're still gathering there, playing cards and so on. So if someone catches something, it's spreading like wildfire in there, you know. And you you go to the supermarket, and you have people who are just families. A large family shows up. Why can't we all go inside? Well, duh. And you have that kind of people too.
Yeah, I guess these people are everywhere.
Yeah, they are. There's an example.
I would say Yeah, please go on.
Do I speak? Okay. I had some friends in Lisbon that they were locked down for like 1 week or so, and decided to go out yesterday afternoon, and you know, walking around in their neighborhood, and they say that everyone's out in the street as if nothing was happening. But that's Lisbon.
Yeah. We had this like 1 week ago when everything was fresh and all this social distancing was not well outspoken by the government as it is by now. Mm. But I feel like more and more people learn and there are still some outliers, some people who just want to have their whatever.
I'd say quite a few.
Yeah. Yeah, not so many. Not so many over here, I would say.
I'll give an example of something that's happening. For example, down in Lisbon, They're putting up roadblocks in the highway. But today's Sunday. No, it's a fine sunny day. At least here it's a bit cloudy, but Lisbon seems it's sunny. So everyone decided to go to the beach, for example. And here also, I've also heard of some roadblocks to stop people from leaving the city and, you know, go enjoy the beach and so on. A couple of weeks ago, when we started talking about, you know, social distancing, stay at home, etc., most people down south saw this as vacation. So, you know, we had the beaches packed full.
Yeah, same here with the parks. But like I said, this is, I mean, today it's actually snowing.
Really? Lucky you, man.
Nah, yeah. Well, yesterday and maybe probably the whole week was fine or really good. Hmm. Today, there's just cold and flying ice out there.
There's what? Sorry?
So I guess most flying ice.
Flying ice.
Hail,
snow,
hail.
Yeah.
A little bit of hail. So I guess the people would have been or would have stayed inside anyway. But over the last week, less and less of these we gather as a crowd people were showing up. Hmm. But you have these guys, you know, you stand in line at the grocery and then someone just passes by everyone and then is shocked when she's not allowed to get inside because the bouncer at the grocery store says, no, ma'am, you have to wait in line, please.
Yeah, we've had that. We've had that here too. We've had that here too.
Yeah. And then they're like, what? Why? What's happening here? Why is there a bouncer at the grocery store?
Yeah, well, I suppose that in there you probably have all these sorts of outside posters put up by the government and so on, like social distancing, please. People, be careful, etc. We have those, you know. You can't pass a bus stop without seeing one of those.
Yeah.
People just don't read them.
Mm.
Or they don't understand or whatever.
Maybe there are still some people left or, as you say, quite a few who just think, this is all made up. This is all panicking of stupid people.
Oh, please, let's not go into the conspiracy theories.
No. This would be far too easy.
I've had my fill of those already.
You did?
I mean, you're online as much as I am.
Yeah, I guess so,
You see them running around, you know. Conspiracy, here comes another one. And it passes you, and then it passes another one. You have no idea where they come from, but they sure as hell show up.
Yeah, totally. And some of them are actually funny, I think, but some of them are just lazy. I mean, one interesting thing I heard yesterday, actually, to your good point, there was someone saying the whole coronavirus issue is just it's just made up, so they can get rid of our cash money.
Oh, for fuck's sake, please, no. Also, there was another one that the corona thing was a conspiracy by the 5G networks, etc. But those are the crazies. But the best, the most, let's say, realistic ones are the ones that say this was a virus engineered in China.
Mm-hmm.
It's not.
I mean, wasn't there even a laboratory in Wuhan where the whole thing started?
No, you didn't see where it started. You didn't read about the Chinese wet markets already?
Yes, I did.
But, I mean, okay, now you're talking with a biochemist. I'm not working on the field at the moment. Yeah. But still, if you have something like one of those wildlife wet markets in China, you have animals from all sorts of species piled up, one on top of the other. They're shitting on each other. They're peeing on each other. You have all kinds of bodily fluids being exchanged between animals. So it's only a matter of time before some sort of bug passes from one species to another, and then jumps to a human. It happened now. It happened in 2002 with the SARS. It happened with the avian flu. And until they close those damn things in there, it's going to happen again.
So you'd say the wet markets are, well, they are not a problem, but probably the problem.
One of them is the problem. It could be one of the major problems. For example, the swine flu.
Yes.
Swine flu, if I'm not mistaken, started in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
That
maybe,
was, what,
I don't
10 years ago or so? 10 years ago? It started, I think, in Mexico or in the United States in a intensive swine, what should we call it? A swine culture? Whatever.
A swinery.
Yes. Well, in Portuguese would be suini cultura. So
let's stick with swine culture. I love swine culture.
Swine culture, swine breeding, pig breeding, whatever. So you have packed animals. So virus, viri, if you want to be correct, pass between them, you know. It's like going to a very nice disco with, you know, everything, no air conditioning or anything, everyone sweating. You go, you have fun for one night, next day, you have a flu.
Mm-hmm.
Does the term machine and flu mean anything to you? Yeah.
A pig's Berghain, if you want.
What? Pig's Berghain. Yeah, why not?
Something like this. Okay.
It's a nice mental image.
Isn't it? So when you say in Porto, everyone is not there, basically, I guess also tourism is down to nothing.
Don't even get me started on that one. Tourism, well, do you know an app called Plane Finder?
Yeah,
I have it. Sometimes I used to check, you know, how many flights would be on the air, and you'd be talking like 22,000 planes on the air at the same time.
But so not scary, over Portugal, yeah. Worldwide.
No, I'm talking globally. Yeah. I checked it this morning, and now we had 2,000 airplanes globally. So 10% of what would be normal.
Okay.
Just for you to get an idea of what the current situation is with air traffic, at least just looking at this. As for tourism, everything was cancelled.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. Well, you know that there are not that many flights traveling at the moment.
Yeah, of course.
But also hotels are also cancelling the reservations.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So they're not taking even just, you know, precautionary measures, etc. They're not taking any guests. We had some in our Airbnbs and so on, and, well, we cancelled the whole thing. Some cancelled, we cancelled the rest. So until June, at least until June, everything is locked.
And that in a time and setting where, I mean, the financial depression from like 2008 isn't that far away. And last time I checked, the Porto was prospering with whatever it does, and I guess
you were here relatively recently. So how many people would be out on the street, tourists, etc.
Yeah.
It was insane. Now when the lockdown started, you had still a few tourists walking about. No, natives would be at their places, no, under lockdown or quarantine or isolating or whatever. And you'd have some tourists circulating.
Yeah.
Now not so much. But then again, I haven't gone downtown in over a week, so I don't know. But at least even here by the riverside, there's not so much.
Okay.
There are not so many tourists, if at all.
Yeah.
It's just natives.
Yeah, I see. And you said the other day restaurants are closed.
Everything. Just doing takeaway and so on.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, same over here.
So if you had come over, yes, it would have been a fun quarantine or fun isolation.
Yeah.
But no going out.
Yeah, I see.
But the weather would be better, definitely.
Like I said, last week was good. I even dusted off my bicycle and went for a decent trip through the woods.
Oh, exercise. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what that is. You know, I'm opposed to exercise, you know.
I know.
As little as possible.
I know. This is another way to get around. How would you say does the Portuguese government handle the whole situation?
Have you seen the news about our prime minister's retort to the Dutch finance minister?
No, I have not. Please,
you haven't?
Update me.
Holy crap. That's a whole can of worms. This was last week. There was a meeting of the EU finance ministers. And in the middle of it, the Dutch finance minister suggested that there should be an investigation to why southern European countries did not have an economic buffer to deal with this sort of situation. Because, you know, fiscal responsibility, blah, 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 blah. And there should be measures to discipline the southern countries. Does this sound even remotely familiar to you?
Not familiar, but it sounds stupid.
Our prime minister classified it as repugnant.
Repugnant?
Did not mince any words.
Oh.
Really, there's actually a speech. I consider these repugnant. If this is the one of the basic principles of the... I'm paraphrasing, not quoting.
Of course.
One of the basic principles of the European Union is solidarity between member states. And if one starts, you know, pushing for punishments and for disciplinary action in times like these, then the union is going to end.
Wisely spoken, I would say. I mean...
Yeah, the Spaniards are not finding the whole situation funny either, and the Italians, of course not. Supposedly, the reasoning behind the Dutch guy was that there was, after the austerity that we had after the 2008 recession, the austerity that I should point out was imposed by Germany, and then Minister Schlaube. Is he still a minister or not?
Wolfgang
Schlaube. I think he was finance minister.
No, I don't think so. But I'm speaking out of my ass here. I've been just looking out for the state's government, what's going on, more or less, right in front of the door.
Yeah. Anyway, so basically, I really hope that someone won't have the brilliant idea of having austerity measures after this whole thing blows over.
If I tell you that I'm not quite sure about the finance minister, but I still remember 2008, think that, I mean, this is what I do, and then I think that a finance minister of the Netherlands should remember as well, if that's not too much to ask.
He's now your president of the Bundestag, Wolfgang Schlaube. Just checked it.
Okay.
Sorry, okay. But...
Yeah, I know you. That's how you are.
No, just to confirm, you know.
Yeah, okay.
But anyway, going back to the 2008 recession.
I mean, Portugal had a rough couple of years, but then were able to get out of this pretty elegantly.
Yeah, we had a social democrat government, which I should point out that the Social Democratic Party in Portugal is center right.
Mm-hmm.
Paradoxical as that may be. And they at the time implemented all the quote unquote necessary austerity measures that were advised by the Fonds Monetaire International, the European Union, World Bank, etc., etc., etc. And after they were kicked out, they were replaced by a socialist government. These are effectively at least center-left. And they started rolling back the austerity measures. And we had something of an economic boom, still with some instability, market volatility, and so on, but not as bad as it was during the previous government.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, well, and now, because I think that tourism is quite a lion's share of this.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a lion's share of our economy. And I'm wondering, for example, well, you were saying a while ago that, you know, we had less tourists. It's a fact. There are less tourists.
Yeah.
Hotels are closing up. Some hotels are closing, some hotels are just blocking reservations.
Yeah.
And remember that there was a boom with all this tourism. There was a boom in with so-called local lodging, Airbnbs, and so on.
Yes,
there was a high level of speculation around property here in Porto. We had it, not so much. Well, also around speculation of buildings to make tourism facilities, tourism units, and also in Lisbon. And a lot of people, you know, took this was a gold rush, let's call it. You know, we had this gold fever, everyone starting their Airbnbs, people renting to sublet as Airbnbs, people asking for bank loans to start Airbnb businesses and so on. So a lot of those are, you know, starting to fold, you know.
Yeah, of course.
It's happening everywhere.
Yeah.
Not here especially. Yeah.
Oh, Lord. What do you think? How long will we have to carry on with this? I mean, I have a guess.
What's your guess? As good as mine.
My guess is, especially talking for Germany, that life will start to normalize around the beginning of June. And
could be.
I mean, the numbers are pretty good, pretty pointing towards this. And I mean, right now they say everything is under this soft lockdown until April the 19th. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that then it will be not much better then, because I think that we will have a peak situation in numbers mid-April. Mm-hmm. So they will say, so guys, you see, we have to lengthen this a little bit. And probably they will say we go on until May the 1st, because May the 1st is also a very special date in the year. And then they will have to throw a bone, and then they will start opening the first shops and allowing this and that gathering, but very, very softly. So it will fizzle out, and then in June everything will slowly get back to normal. But this is just for Germany, for how the public will receive it.
I've seen the numbers. There's a YouTube channel that does live updates of numbers.
Okay.
So number of infected, number of fatalities, number of recovered.
Yeah, gotcha.
And I don't have the link here at the moment. And I've been following it. I'd see that as far as Germany goes, the death rate in there is quite low. Very, very low. It could be that you don't have that many infected and that you are actually testing a lot of people.
Maybe.
While, for example, here the death rate is not as high as in, for example, Italy.
Yeah.
Or at least officially. But that's something I was talking with someone a while ago, is that judging globally, we're talking 2% death rate. Italy has, I don't know, 10% or whatever. So if we're talking 2% death rate, so globally, and, you know, this is should be basic statistics, then the number of identified cases in Italy is just the tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's just the tip of the iceberg. Same thing applying in Spain. Same thing probably applying also in the United States. And even here. There, I don't know how effective you are being with deploying testing and so on. In here, now we're developing. There was some news this morning about homemade, quote-unquote, or Portuguese testing kits being developed.
What?
So, well, our universities aren't stopped, you know.
But you...
So research departments are being mobilized, etc. So we're developing our own testing kits.
Okay. So you will have a variety of testing kits then, or are they all standardized?
Well, there will have to be a standardization.
Okay.
there has to be a standardization to be able to report things. But for example, I'll give you an example. The tests that so far have been used, they detect the number of plasmids, so the number of viral particles. Excuse me, in the sample, and there's a cutoff of number to be identified, and the ones that are being used in the West, and this is important because I'm going to go tangentially off afterwards, is around 10,000 plasmids. Okay.
Okay.
One of the reasons, for example, that Russia is not giving any decent values. And if you notice the values, just a moment, I need to sneeze.
Please do.
Yeah, and on top of this, we have spring allergies.
Yeah.
Is that the Russian kits being used are also produced in-house, but their testing cutoff is 100,000 plasmids. So much less sensitive than what is being routinely used or standardized. So these things you can just make them anywhere, as long as they're all detecting the same thing, and to the same degree or to a standardized degree, it's good.
Okay, just to ask, the little sniffle that I hear from you is an allergy, right?
Yes.
Amazing. That's good to hear.
Or at least I think it is.
Yeah. Who knows?
Should be.
Who knows? Yeah, of course.
Hey, it only starts when I catch some sun or go out. And a while ago, I was had to go through the garden, so lots of pollen and stuff.
Gotcha. All right. So what's your take on this? What do you think? Or will you? Or do you reserve judgment about this? No, you don't.
What was it? We don't judge people on their color. We just judge them, right?
Pretty much.
But no, I don't know. A while ago, you were saying that the situation would blow over around June. I'm saying that there might be still outbreaks, or we might be looking at occasional quarantines for, let's say, a couple of years being declared due to flare-ups.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that this thing, once a vaccine is developed, it's going to be like the flu. It's going to be seasonal.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
I don't know. Might be. And as for a peak, we're looking at our peak around May, I think. They were saying it might have a peak around May.
You've started, I guess, a couple of weeks after we started. And the number went around that it should be roughly 3 months. From start to finish, pretty much.
Could be, yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Do you believe these numbers from China, that they are, well...
No. That they've stabilized it?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
You do? You I do don't. Not? Okay.
That's just, I don't know. It seems all too perfect, you know? And there was a segment on Sky News, I don't know, recently an Australian thing.
Mm-hmm.
And also another... let's say, reliable video, so from one of the science groups, about how the whole thing was handled in China. And this is now well documented. Item one, the whole thing started in November. Item two, the doctors that sounded the alert were all put under house arrest or under arrest or whatever. Some of them vanished.
Okay.
So this was November, December. The alert comes out in January. So they lost 2 months, you know, just trying to put a lid on it and hoping it would go away, or preserving social harmony, as is normally called in China. And then it blows out of proportion.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't trust numbers that are coming out of there now. There was also a segment on BBC or started on Yahoo News via BBC about people that go there. And the residents in Wuhan are going like, don't believe anything, there are still people dying, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
The whole thing is still under lockdown, so.
Okay. Is it?
It's just, you know, it's probably just propaganda for inside and outside consumption.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, could be. Everyone will, as long as it's about reporting numbers, will pretty much try to paint with a finer brush to make it seem in whatever is their favor.
Well, that's one of the advantages of democracy, right?
Yeah, of course.
Everyone's supposed to be accountable, so the numbers that are being communicated are supposedly reliable, and if they're not, someone will blow the whistle and will know. On the other hand, on an authoritarian regime, if someone blows the whistle, they disappear.
Yeah, I gotcha. I think this is actually interesting, if you ask me, because I guess it shows people, and I'm not talking politicians, I'm talking general public, it shows the people that the whole system as we know it, and I mean system as a whole, is probably not that stable as it seemed to be.
Well, democracy by definition isn't stable.
No.
Stable. There has to be some instability to keep it fluid. If you're talking about, just us, democracy, Western democracies.
I don't mean just democracies as a system.
So you're talking globally.
Yeah, I'm talking globally, and I talking about the social fabric as well. I mean, everything. Everything is literally, there's a virus, and it's like someone was pulling the brakes. And what?
Yeah, no, I'm hearing.
Ah, okay. Yeah, someone was pulling the brakes, and in the first days, everybody was like, "What's going on?"
Because sorry,
nobody knew.
Just a moment, I can't
what
hear
to
you
do at all. Okay, okay. Am I returning?
I didn't hear half what you said. It was
okay. Yeah, probably.
Now you are.
I think there are a couple of people who will, and not even few, maybe hopefully many, see that there are opportunities of things to do, of different paths to walk, etc., etc. Because this is a once in a lifetime thing. And it's not presented as a chance, but it's circumstance. It's strange, new, probably hard circumstance that equalizes a lot of the global populace.
Mm.
That's pretty much my point.
Yeah, well, I can see I can see your point, and also that it will be as callous as this may sound, there will be lots of opportunity now. And I'm not talking about profiteering at other people's expense, that there should be opportunity. And afterwards as well. I mean, it's a bit like the Great Depression. After the Great Depression, okay, we had a World War, which was also something of a mess. But after that, you had probably the greatest
prosperity
era of human history.
That's absolutely right. And I love this phrasing, which was also a bit of a mess.
Yeah, well, excuse me for the understatement.
All right. I'm curious. I'm actually curious about three things. First of all, how it all will unfold. I think the next weeks are definitely going to be very, very interesting. And, it's a nice social experiment, if you want to.
I was dreading you were going to say experiment, but yes, it's true.
Yeah, it somehow is. And second of all, I really hope that within Europe, everything will level out soon, because I'm still dying to get on a plane to go to Portugal.
Drive, dude, drive.
Yeah,
you can
maybe.
With some effort, you can do from there to here in, let's just say, 3 days if you are relaxed about it.
Yeah, of course. I know how to use maps.
There you go.
All right. And third of all, I'm really curious how the whole remote podcasting session we did worked out. So, famous or infamous last words for this session?
No, I'd rather not. I'd rather avoid quotes like over my dead body and so on.
Okay, man. Remember, don't close the tap. We will chat in a few minutes after this whole thing stopped. All right? Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Give me a second.
3, 2, 1, click.
Es war zu kurz. Hätte man mehr rausholen können. Ich gebe zu, ich war ein bisschen nervös, ob dieses ganze Remote-Podcasting funktioniert. Tatsächlich dank Zencaster, den wir verwendet haben, hat das Ganze hervorragend funktioniert. Sollte man nachholen. Sollte man nochmal was mitmachen. Vielen Dank auf jeden Fall fürs Zuhören. Ich fand's gut. Ich hoffe, ihr auch. Und bis zum nächsten Mal.